Hey, Josh.
Hey, Nate. How you doing this week?
I am doing pretty great. It's just had a birthday for my son yesterday, and so we went out to a little theme park and we went to a children's museum. So it was a good day. Got out with the family. It's been a while since we've done that. Lots of fun.
Cool. Happy birthday,
Yeah.
little one. How old?
He is 4. Yeah.
Trying to think what we did around those. I know we did a, I don't know if it was exactly for my son's birthday, but in and around that age, big into like trucks and trains. And we went to there's an amusement park in New Jersey. It's kind of small scale, but it's called Diggerland, and
Nice.
it's like you get it's all basically like construction equipment themed, and you get to drive some of the things, and small scales
Nice.
or control certain things that are massive and move dirt around and stuff. It's pretty cool.
I think I've seen ads for that. That looks like a lot of fun. My son would definitely be all over that. Yeah. How are you doing this week?
I'm good. I'm good. We just had our team meeting today. It's a every second Wednesday. Yeah, all hands. Yeah, went well. Kind of, it's a nice point to kind of talk about numbers and get everyone together. If there's a new person, the new person gets introduced. Yeah, so it's a good time to kind of, as a remote company, quote unquote, get some face time. And then, we shared a little bit about some of the product things that are coming, but half the team on there is product, so it's sort of like half a chance to just showcase their work, so to speak, and then another half to just have the other teams excited about what's coming. So
Yeah, I think
good
those things
times.
are I think those things are often underrated. I think there's a lot of good things that come out of just seeing other people on the team and hearing about what other people are up to.
Yeah, it's hard. It's funny, is it's one of these things where like if you just listen to Twitter and LinkedIn, it just sounds like meetings are awful, right? Like it's just you hear people complaining, and then as a leader or manager or founder or whatever, you're just like, but that's not me, right? Or but my meetings are actually productive. And I get it. I've been in those companies where the meeting culture is repetitive and like basically no one's going like, is there actually any value out of this meeting, right? So that's why we do it monthly. It also follows a low lift formula that like everyone gets to see what's going on. Also not, I don't know. I feel like we've got a good formula down, but again, maybe my employees are out there complaining on LinkedIn and Twitter, but at least it's short. It's once a month and it's like, okay, fine. Then take your medicine and that's it. But there are a lot of people that I think do engage and are very interested in sort of we handle it in a way that is just like it's short, succinct. We hear from every team in a short way. And I think it's digestible and kind of checks the boxes and gives enough of the other stuff. Like we have a I have a goofy question in the beginning, so it's a little bit of a open-ended conversation and everyone gets to speak and it might be something some I call them odd questions, but icebreaker style types of things. Like today's question was like, do you believe creativity can be taught? So it was interesting. So people know they just kind of not just like, yes, okay, move it on. Like they kind of explain why they think that and it's sort of open-ended. So you get to learn about people too. So,
That's fun. That's cool.
anyway, so couple things to chat about today. I sent you an article that I thought was kind of interesting. It's from Saster, which classically has just really, really good stuff. The title of the article is How Do I Start a Successful SaaS? So it's a very broad stroke, but I think there's still a lot of interesting points to be made about it. And then the only other topic I had was, you know, we were chatting a bit about browsers and annoyance of maybe podcast recording software that doesn't always get all the recordings bits. And yeah, I've been playing around with Arc, mostly because I'm a Windows person and it only got, I think, betaed to Windows, I don't know, a few months ago, and I was on the beta list, but I didn't make it in the first round. And then I got a notification maybe a month ago, and then 2 weeks later, it was like out to everyone. So I've been tinkering with that a bit and kind of getting a new browser into my habit cycle. And I like the way they have a point of view with it. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, good stuff. Well, I'm excited. I've got some ideas about both of those things.
Cool. All right. What do you want to cover first?
Why don't we do the article first? I'll okay. selfishly pick that.
Sure. So I'll just brief through it, just the options. So they give, it's funny that the intro says, I think there's approximately two ways to get a new SaaS app off the ground, although he lists more. Jason Lemkin often re-updates these articles and refreshes them with new opinions. So option number one is hustle into the enterprise. Option number two is build a lot of slick stuff for SMBs and see what sticks. Option three is be one of the top 5 to 10 partners on a key platform. And yeah, that's sort of it. So I don't know. Where do you want to dive in first?
Well, maybe we could talk about like option two. I feel like that's kind of where we live, like trying to build things for SMB. I find it interesting that he says it's kind of, you know, you just kind of guess and like you just try and make stuff and hopefully people buy it kind of thing. Maybe do some research, but like that a lot of it is just, you know, you try and you have to build lots of features to make it better than someone else's thing or whatever, and you have to kind of make it low friction to be able to get people into it, and it takes time to get it right before, you know, people get viable companies out of these things. At least that's his opinion. I don't know, is there anything that kind of stuck out to you in that section?
I think it was interesting the way he says it's riskier in some ways. Because unlike the hustle strategy, the initial go-to-market is murkier, which I agree with because there's basically it's a much larger, not as deep pool is kind of how I think about it, right? So it's harder to get attention and maybe you're operating in, not sure where this analogy is going, but smaller parts of the pool, little quadrants of the pool. There's, you know, it may not run that deep, right? And it's hard to kind of like, you're fishing a lot and trying to figure out. And then because it's a large, as they call TAM, like total addressable market per se, you have to either pick a smaller area or you have to try to just stand out in the crowd. And maybe it's like you're trying to get attention versus Netflix and whatever. And also knowing that your price points are going to be lower means you also have, you know, getting ROI for like the activities you're doing is also potentially more challenging, right? Like with a big enterprise, you land one big fish and like you could spend a lot and you could do a lot of effort to land that and not feel like it's necessarily wasted because at the end of the day, you get a, you know, $100,000 a year contract or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right. Cause like you end up with like a smaller price point. And I think also, I wonder if because it's a smaller price point, if there's less thought given to like purchasing your particular software. So like if you're selling to a small company and they need some support software, for example, they might be less willing to talk to you about, oh, I have this like need for support software. You don't have anything yet, but I'll talk to you anyways, kind of thing. Like, I don't think that would happen. Whereas, like, I think in an enterprise, they'd be like, yeah, I have this need for this, you know, very specific type of support software. I can't find anything like it. You know, I know you don't have anything, but you're interested in maybe building it for me. You know, I'd like to talk to you and tell you about what I want.
Yeah, I think there's something to that. I don't know about the price. I mean, there's definitely, I think depending on the type of decision, especially for SaaS, I think it's all of them. I would say most of them are, well, some of them, I will say. It's hard to like say that the volume of them. I've been thinking about this a lot on like a, what is a considered purchase versus a like impulse purchase. If you've heard those terms before, like the considered purchase is the one that takes a lot more time to make a decision. And I would think honestly for like maybe a support software, even for an SMB, it is a highly considered purchase regardless of the price, because of there's workflows involved. If you have one, the switching costs, like, oh, do I have to keep the other system running? Cause what if some people have that email address? How do I switch this? Like it's still a tough decision to make that requires a lot of research and a migration plan. And it's not just like, I mean, I'll be, you know, one of these other ones is like this podcast recording software. Mm-hmm. That's probably not as much a considered, highly considered purchase. Like that could be a more impulse buy because you can tinker around. It's easy to switch to another one. If I don't like my other one, I can switch back and forth. I can try Zoom. I can try these other ones with very little like risk. I don't have, they don't host my platform, maybe host all my podcasts, things like that. But maybe podcast hosting is probably a more of a considered switch unless you've never picked one before. You're like, hey, I'm going to be in bed with this for a long time, or even picking a website platform might be like a more highly considered purchase.
Right. But I guess what the difference is, I think of like a podcast hosting platform, for example, there are hosting platforms out there. And so because of that, I would consider, you know, kind of the top bunch of those to kind of look through, but I don't fully know what I need other than the basics, or maybe I have some strong opinions, but I don't think that's everybody. I'm not about to go to you and say, hey, Josh, could you build me like a brand new podcast hosting platform that does X, Y, Z? Like that, I think that's the difference where like people would be less willing to talk to you. So you have to kind of guess. So like, if you wanted to enter podcast hosting, you'd have to just kind of look at the market and be like, I think that this is a problem. You know, I should address that particular problem.
Yeah, I'm still not, maybe I'm not sure what you're saying on, because you keep bringing up this one about people being willing to talk to you. So that's like and I think that's a different conversation than a considered purchase versus a unconsidered purchase. Like I think we're talking about two slightly different things. But let's go in on yours. So what are you, like when we're talking about this option two, sticking to SMBs, talking about it being like a wider space. There's a lot of these people, but they're all kind of all over the place. And then like I said, the pool is not very deep. Like they're not spending $100,000 on software. So when we're talking about that, and my point was that they're both unconsidered or impulse versus and considered purchases within that scope.
Yeah, but I would agree.
So we're good on that. So what on this other part you're saying about people being willing to talk, is this still related to option two?
Well, I think it's kind of a generalized, like I think in it, for option two, like for SMB, I think people are less willing to talk to you about a possible solution. I think they need to see something in front of them that you have already kind of made before they're willing to have that discussion, or they're less willing to talk about that. So like if you had either, you know, you're either going to go to an SMB market or you're going to go to an enterprise market to build them software that does not yet exist. I think the enterprise would be more willing to talk to you about what a possible solution might look like versus the SMBs.
Okay.
I don't know if
so you're attacking it from a different point of view. So like for an SMB that has a pain point, you're saying that like they have a specific thing in mind and they are less likely to talk to a SaaS provider about it without having the software first? Is that?
No, like if you don't, if you're someone that's going to make a new software that doesn't yet exist, like you're going to enter a new market. So let's say like, you know, Josh is going to enter like the project management market. And if you're going to do that, I think people would be quite unwilling to talk to you about that, like unless you incentivize them somehow about their problems with project management. They would sooner look on Google and be like, hey, there's Trello, there's, you know, whatever else, you know, here's the five options. I'll pick one of them. Let me consider that for a couple of weeks. Okay, I'm going to use this one. Rather than waiting for however many months for you to build something that, you know, maybe is closer to what they want.
Okay.
I don't know. That's just my
okay.
Thought.
No, it's fine. I'm just trying to understand because I guess I'm trying to think of like, not trying to think of what the research takes to build it and getting user research or any of that. I'm just so I think I get what you're saying.
Right, because I think
I guess that supports... I don't know. I don't necessarily agree because like I talk to a lot of like I would put Referral Rock in option two.
Mm.
And I didn't have a product and I was able to get people to talk to me about what they were like looking for and whatnot. And I don't know, different time, different, you know, I don't know. So, yeah. And I guess I would also say, you know, just from a willingness to talk, like we get still more, a larger percentage of people want to talk to us before even looking at the product. Like we have you'd be surprised how many people like get on the call and don't even know what the pricing is, even though we have it everywhere. Like we're not trying to hide it and they've never seen the product. They just clicked the, like, I want to talk to somebody.
Yeah.
So,
but I think,
and that's so squarely in the SMB space as well.
So I think, but that I would differentiate between like the fact that you already have an existing product and website and all of these things. And it's clear that you already have customers and a product. Right. And so to talk to you about your solution is like, okay, I've got these, you know, you came up on Google as one of the five that I'm going to consider. I'm just going to book calls with all of these five and I'm going to just talk to them and figure out what I like the best. Versus when you're a new player and you don't yet have software. And so it's like more of a research sort of discussion than a sales discussion.
Okay. Okay. So I guess it's more of like, again, it's still early on. Well, already he says like the initial go-to-market is murky, right? Like, so getting anyone to talk to you, try anything, sign up for a beta, just like get on a list, anything is challenging, right? Like it's and then on the flip side of something like that is a little more enterprise, even if it's just like the pain point is big enough and knowing that there's not a solution, like talking to someone as an expert in that space and what they would do and maybe what they can provide, whether it's software or services, is probably an easier door to open to have like those initial conversations. So willingness to kind of talk about the problems and challenges versus defaulting to searching, right? Is like kind of what you're saying. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, because I think if you,
What did you think of the? Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, because I was going to say, I think if you flip to the enterprise, I think that the enterprise way that Jason kind of presents it sounds a lot like consulting, like productized consulting, basically. Like it's like you, if you go around and you find a bunch of people and you just say like, "Hey, what are your problems?" You know, and tell me what kind of budget you have to address that particular problem,
right.
And then you pick the ones that you like the best. And you go off and you make it for, you know, 20 or 30 people. That sounds like I really like that the sound of that market, just because there's a lot of guidance there from these people as to what exactly they want. And maybe there's less murkiness, that we're kind of talking about in the SMB side of things.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think one thing that, you didn't mention here, but you mentioned like, you know, it's a lot of it is like product size consulting, and it's sort of if you engage with a, you know, basically it's someone that has a pain point and they also have, like, they know what that costs them, right? So, mm-hmm. like, and I think that's something that a lot of SMBs don't even know. Like, they might have the pain point, but they don't know what it really costs them, right? And that's, mm-hmm. I think that's one of the big things. So when an enterprise or a business, it's more of like you're a professional business that has cash flow and you understand that really that time is money and like resources is money and all of those other things. And like, no, I wouldn't just hire it and build it because no, our core product is manufacturing X. So why would we spend our time doing that? And we don't even have software developers. Like, it just doesn't make any sense to me. But if you can make my, you know, foreman on the floor, like five times more productive, heck yeah. Like, you can put a ROI to that and mm-hmm. I don't care if it's a magic wand or a, you know, gnomes that come and do the service. Like, I don't care if you could solve this problem, like I will, you know, pay you 10 grand a month. Right. So yeah. It's sort of a no brainer. You talk to them about the problem and they can easily identify with it. And then they're like, you might have to go through procurement, but sure. their willingness to write a check. And yeah, I think that's a good analogy when you mentioned the productized service thing. It's sort of there, and there is a very straightforward playbook. And like I said, I think that might be a big part of it is they understand the cost.
Yeah. And I think they also understand exactly what the solution, or at least what the solution should look, the end result of the solution. Right. Like making the foreman this much faster or, you know, making this particular process this much easier. Like, it's a very deliverable thing. And I think there's something great about that. Whereas I think when mm-hmm. you're in the SMB world, maybe there's more kind of touchy feely things, right? Where it's like,
they might not know what they want. Right.
Mm-hmm. But also like they might be just happy with something that feels good. Right. Like if you can get the feelings right, that might be enough for what they're looking for. No, like I've got like a Todoist.
Yeah, I get it. I think it's
got this little, like it's got this little like check when you check off a certain number of tasks, it does this like little happy dance thing. And like, I don't know, I could see how that just does it. Like, you know.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And like even he says that there are other ways into that kind of pocketbook of the enterprise. So whether it's the whole, you know, developer first or product led growth or whatever, but you know, kind of old school examples now feels like, but if you provided a tool that was like, help the developers, like mm-hmm. get a happy dance, but then they needed the enterprise version. And all of a sudden I have 20 of my developers doing the happy dance and like, they're like, okay, I guess we should just, pay the enterprise version for this because it makes them happy and it makes them more productive, right? That's like the, or if the foreman adopted the product first and then it's sort of like that whole land and expand type of model that, again, very proven model if that can work, if you can attract the users, the people that would use the thing every day mm-hmm. with something. So
I wonder if there's also something with like there in a large company, there's also more like focused roles. So there is like a specific role that you could go to that has to do with like, you know, performance improvements in certain areas. And so you can find the person who like is laser focused on a particular outcome and, you know, ask them how you can help them. And so that conversation could be a lot more productive than talking to the SMB owner or even like a manager who is trying to wear like, you know, 10 different hats and, you know, maybe doesn't have them all on straight and really know what they care about for a particular thing.
No, I'd agree with that. There's definitely something to that. One, from a, how do you market to that person with 10 hats? Like mm-hmm. if you speak to them like the part marketer in them, they may not land or may not even land that day because they weren't working on marketing. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to that, like, you know, so there's that targeted persona, so to speak. So like being able to focus on that personality type and that person's individual pain points. yeah, I think there's a lot to that. Also, they're, like you said, even with those 10 hats, they're super distracted. One of the things that we've thought about a lot recently is, you know, we don't necessarily lose to competitors, but we'll lose to no action, right? So they are picking some other project, like, hey, swapping out my support system for a new ticketing system, right? Or starting a podcast to do marketing versus, you know, so they basically go, what do I have time to do this month? What is most important? And if they didn't think running a referral program was compelling enough, they might pick other things. Not that they weren't interested or they didn't think we were any good. They just, like, from the priority stack that this SMB person wearing 10 hats is, it's much further down on the list.
Yeah, totally. Did you have any other thoughts on the article?
The last one was interesting too. So the option 3 was be one of the top 5 to 10 partners on a key platform. This one's interesting. I think it's a niche play and it's a risky one. You know, they gave the example of Klaviyo basically becoming the, you know, I think email marketing number one platform on Shopify, right? Mm-hmm. So, and I think, yeah, it's one of these things that, you know, it's probably, you have to have good timing and good insight to sort of, one, when the platform first came about, right? Like, how many people were in, you know, the app stores when they first launched, right? And like, being a, let's say you're a subject matter expert in a certain type of software, and then a new platform arises, and you have to bet, is this platform actually going to be worth me, like, going through the hurdles and being a app in their marketplace? And if that's true, and you're first, right, you get sort of first mover advantage. So there can be a lot there, or you can wait for things to mature, but then you let, you know, potentially a competitor jump in there quickly, and they don't have the legacy stuff to maintain that you might have had on your central platform living in a different ecosystem, right? So there's risk, but it is, like, once you do, it's also a built-in distribution channel. So I think a lot of the stuff we were talking about earlier, the challenges of SMB were getting distribution. Or, you know, go to market. Enterprise was clear, but also expensive and time consuming, and probably, like, you need to have a lot of expertise and deep expertise and other things as well. It was defined. It's just a lot of work. And this other one is sort of like a gambling mentality. It's like you have to make a calculus, be in the right place at the right time with the right thing, but a lot of the problems could be solved for you.
Yeah. I feel like the being in a marketplace, like, there's a lot of risks to that, right? If that's like if that's what's going to make you win, like, being the number one app on Shopify is what's going to make you win, like, that feels like a lot of risk, because you have to, like you said, get in there early. Then you also need that platform to win, like, versus any of the other platforms that might compete. And then you also need to, like, hope that they're going to work well with you, right? Like, if you, like, maybe they're just a company that doesn't care too much about its ecosystem. They care more about their core product or something like that.
Right.
Like, that's, I don't know, that feels like a lot of risks.
Yeah, I guess it depends on your risk profile, right? And the person, and you're just like, hey, it doesn't, you know, if I'm not any good at marketing, and maybe that's actually not a bad play because I can be in that store, right? There's trade-offs with all of them, but you're right. For me, it's a risk. Like, I don't like the idea that someone else has a major piece of control on my destiny, right? So, they could rug pull, they could decide my app was whatever, they could build the app. Once they see the success, they have the data and they build a version themselves. Like, you're right. It is fraught with risk. And for me, it's not one I like. I don't mind being attached onto it, but not necessarily as the core business, right? Like, that some people, like, fully attach themselves to a platform.
Yeah. No, I agree. Because I've seen that kind of with like Heroku and with DigitalOcean. Like especially on DigitalOcean, I had that with StatusList. I have like an uptime service. And then DigitalOcean's mm-hmm. like, oh, we'll just, you know, sell our own uptime service. And you're like, oh, okay, great.
Did they add that after you were public in there? Or
after, you know, you do all the integration work. Right. And like Heroku, for example, like they've really kind of lowered the profile of their add-ons, add-on store. And actually that platform is like less, it seems to be less popular than it used to be. And so it's like, yeah, the rising tide raises all ships, but the falling tide also falls all ships. So there's a bit of that too. It does solve the distribution problem though, in some ways. So it's not like it's not like you get nothing, but.
Right. It's not all risk and no reward. It's just a different profile, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Cool. All right. Cool. You want to talk about Arc a little bit? It doesn't have to be very long, but
tell me about Arc. It's been like a year since I've used it.
I mean, one of the key things, and maybe it just matches well with my behaviors, is like, you know, I am the have many tabs open. Tabs represent like projects, ideas, research, like things to do, like whatever. And I often find myself opening a lot of the same tabs, right? And sometimes I've tried to do it with like in Chrome or whatever and pin certain tabs. And sometimes, you know, something closes and I lose them. And it's just like there's been a couple other players in the space. I forgot years ago, there was one that tried to make this whole app interface and like wrapping around. And again, I forgot what it was called.
Was that the Chrome apps?
And not well, so yeah. And then there's Chrome apps as well. And the Chrome apps are like trying to make individual apps like pulled out, like type of thing. But I don't know. So more of it is this, the concept of workspaces, which sort of aligns well with what I keep on, like, you know, one browser with certain tabs. I'll just kind of start to at least group them together. Like, oh, this is when I'm in the homepage copywriting mentality. Mm. Here's ones for inspiration. Here's like things I like here. And I'll just put them all and I'll just like drag and drop them all into one when I realize when I was on a research tear and there's five or six in them. And then sometimes I'll come up with other ones and I'll be like, oh, let me just at least move this over there. Mm. And then another one with the many hats thing is like SEO. So I have to watch our SEO and I am researching and I have certain spreadsheets, certain like, you know, certain tools I use. And I started in Arc at least creating a separate workspace and just kind of like, I figured out a way to like collapse a lot of these jobs to be done for Josh into little workspaces. So they made sense kind of one, instead of trying to remember to pin, these are the ones that stay persistent. And then this is my exploratory space like underneath. So I'm using the whole workspace and had to figure out, make sure you drag them towards the top because above the line like keeps them. Yeah. And then like below the line sort of like it makes them transient. And so I don't like that because I'm a never close until I close it person.
Oh, okay.
So I end up going over there and dragging most of them up.
Yeah. Okay. Nice. I feel like that was like the one feature that I found useful in Arc. Like what you're talking about is the workspaces, but I don't have like that many workspaces that I like want to spend the mental energy maintaining. I just kind of just open tabs that I need and then I close them all and start over every morning. But when I did have Arc, I found that I tried to do workspaces and then I just got sick of switching back and forth between the workspaces. And so I was like, I'm just going to use one giant one. And so I like to go down like research rabbit trails and I'll have like, you know, 10 tabs open in a row of like the same kind of thing. And then I'll just, you know, treat it like a stack, just pop the back 10 off and leave whatever I have, you know, kind of more to the left.
Right. Okay. I think there's a way you could like share workspaces. I haven't tried that yet. Like, I think I could I heard about that on a podcast about it, but I haven't really played with that. Like where I could sort of like share a whole space with you. So basically I don't know how that would really pan out, because it's like kind of like notes and certain things. Like some browser stuff is very personalized. Like it's just sort of like
I think there's something where you can like track notes and like a whiteboard, like a shared whiteboard kind of thing. I think there's something like that in Arc. There's a bunch of like weird little things like that I never really found a use for. Did you try the AI stuff on Arc?
I have not.
Okay.
So
you have to let me know how that goes.
The workspace thing is what I found the most useful so far. And yeah, there's other little quirks that I'm kind of like, that's interesting. But like, and again, maybe the more workspaces I build in there, because my brain does work that way. You know, maybe I'll build other habits with that. It was also nice to like, I think I had it on my laptop and desktop and synced them. So then I had those workspaces synced. So it is nice to be like, I just want to open my laptop and where did I leave off? Where do I want to work on? And that seems to work really well. So
cool. Well, we'll see how long you stay on the bandwagon.
Doesn't hurt, because I mean, I go across between, I have Edge loaded for this, like actually I'm running Edge on this, so like it will just like a tab, it will not get uninstalled anytime soon unless I get a new computer and I have to like reinstall apps, and then maybe it might not make the cut, but for now it'll be there for a probably pretty long duration.
I think I actually still had Arc like 2 weeks ago still installed. And then I ran out of space, so I had to delete it. But it just sat there and never got used.
All right. Cool. All right.
All right.
Well, thanks, Nate.
Thank you. Have a good one.
You too. Bye.
Bye. Hey, thanks for joining us today. If you want to chat with us, we're on Twitter. I'm at Nate Bosher, and Josh is at JLogic. If you're a new listener, check out some of our most popular episodes. Episode 52. 7 years to 22 MRR and zombie startups, or episode 30, review sites are a necessary evil and hacks to get around them. Thanks again.